Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson RV, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, and Ray Marine Electronics.
We're back to Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. We have not had this guy on in a long, long time, and so he does not get any more Saturday mornings off. Rick Grable, right behind the real counter there, Hooked on Toys of Wenatchee, joining us this morning. Good morning, and welcome back to the show.
Morning, Rick.
Morning,
Rick.
How you doing, buddy?
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Oh, good. I called you yesterday, and of course, wasn't surprised to hear that there's just a whole lot of stuff going on in North Central Washington, like usual.
Yeah, not a bad place to be.
And between yesterday and now, have you guys figured out how to catch those coho yet out of the Wenatchee River or the Columbia? I mean, you got a pile of coho over there, 53,000 coho over Rock Island Dam, and I know you guys are working feverishly to figure out how to catch those damn things up there. What do you got, buddy?
Well, it's funny, you know, not that many people are doing it yet, and it's going to be a fabulous fishery if guys will get on it. And you're right, they haven't figured it out, but I'm sure the basic stuff that's always worked for coho and rivers will work here too. So blue fox spinners are always a go-to deal. Twitch and jigs, of course, are a great way to go. Eggs under a bobber. I mean, there's lots of things for people to try.
Yeah, sounds like it. So most of those coho I was surprised to hear this, are headed to the Wenatchee River and then up into the Icicle.
Correct.
I mean, where are these fish now? Are they in the Columbia, or have they started making their way up the river yet, up the Wenatchee?
Most of them are still out in the Columbia. Mm-hmm. The Wenatchee and the Icicle are down low, although my brother last week got a really nice coho out of the Icicle, twitching a jig. And he told me yesterday when I talked to him that he was up there walking a river and saw quite a few fish in the Icicle too. And just remember, guys, if you can see them, they can see you. So be cautious when you walk up to those rivers if you're going to fish for those coho.
Yeah, that's a great point too. There's no question about it. So Joey and I, last winter, got to go over for the first time over to Rufus Woods. And to say that we are fired up about going back there is a gross and complete understatement. So you recently were at Rufus Woods. What did you find up there, buddy?
Well, I mean, there was lots of triploids around. They were just a little smaller than what we're used to getting. But that doesn't mean that any time when you set the hook, it could be a 15-pound fish.
Yeah.
They're in there. And as you know, wintertime is a real popular time to be up there. But, I mean, it's 12 months a year. You can go get those fish 12 months of the year.
What size range are you catching right now?
Well, right now, 3 or 4 pounds. We got a couple of 5-pounders.
Yeah, nice fish.
Nice fish.
Tyburn woke up. All I got to do is talk about Rufus Woods. He remembers that 16-pounder he got in his first or second cast, dude.
That's a fun fishery.
Dude, they bend your brain.
Yeah.
They're so doggone big. But then the other thing about them, their table quality is ridiculous. I smoke those things. And I use the same smoker all year long, okay? And over the course of the summer, yeah, you get some salmon oil that kind of rolls them about.
Had to degrease it.
Dude,
after
I'm
those
telling
things.
You, I had no idea. After I smoked, I rolled the thing into the garage. And it looked like I just changed the oil on my truck. I mean, seriously, the oil that comes off those things is ridiculous. But
it's just so cool to watch this rainbow come up, and it rolls over on its side, and you're like, it's a foot wide.
Yeah.
Like, look at that thing.
They're not even right.
No.
They're not.
No.
Their heads are little.
They have
their
little tiny heads.
They do.
Big, fat bodies.
They look like one-eyed halibut. I mean, seriously.
You had to say Rufus Woods. So what's going on, too? We've been hearing some reports from Vernita. Sounds like there's quite a few kings in that reach. They're not all that easy to catch, but what's happening in that stretch, buddy? You got it there for years.
Well, you know, it's always the same story. The guys that know what they're doing, they're getting their limits every day. You know, and then the general population struggles a little bit. But the basic thing is, super baits and the new Yakima Spinfish trolling downstream. You know, you're moving along 3.5-4 miles an hour going downstream with the current. And boy, when they hit, you don't have to wonder about it. They'll just fold your rod over.
What are guys sticking inside those things?
Tuna, of course, oil-packed tuna with a fish attractant. Of course, Grable's guide formulas are kind of popular. But any fish attractant is going to up your odds with those Chinook in a river.
Now, that's still just a fantastic fishery, but what's happened to the size of the fish in there? I mean, do they get many 30, 40, and dare I say even 50-pounders out of that reach anymore? Or what are you seeing for size in the reach these days, buddy?
Well, unfortunately, all the years of gill nets and the size of the mesh, you know, they caught all the big fish out of the system, or, you know, 99% of them. So they reduced the mesh size, and they've kept doing that over the years. And now our average fish is, you know, 10, 12 pounds. And a 20, 25-pounder, they're in there, but they're kind of rare. A 40 or 50 pounder, boy, I haven't seen a real on the scale 50 pound fish in a long time.
Yeah, we're talking to you yesterday. It sounded like your biggest fish out of there was 57 pounds back in the the mid 80s. Yeah. When was that, buddy?
Oh, early 80s.
Early 80s.
Yeah, I think it was 82, something like that.
Monster.
And back then, it wasn't that big of a deal to get a 50 pound fish. But they're very rare now.
Now switching gears over to Lake Chelan, what's going on with the kokanee in there, first of all? And then it sounds like guys are catching some Chinook out of that, the big lake as well in there. That Chinook fishery's kind of taken off, sounds like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a group of people here in Central Washington. They don't talk about it much because they don't want the competition, probably. But I don't think they have any worries. There's a lot of Chinook in the lake there, and they're talk about table fare. They are a shrimp-fed Chinook, and they are hard to beat when it comes to being the best-eaten Chinook in the world. And so much fun to catch. For a long time, it was you better be fishing within 20 feet of the bottom, unless you're up there cracking on early morning. You had to be down on the bottom to be catching those fish. Now, for some reason, we catch a lot of suspended Chinook. Even if you're in 250, 300 feet of water, we're targeting Chinook 120 to 180 feet deep. And that bite, that mid-depth bite, is pretty consistent.
And is it still a small herring thing? Or because they're feeding on shrimp, are you running flasher squid stuff or just the herring?
It's always been a herring thing, and they like smaller baits. Mm-hmm. Although I talk to guys in the store that are running Green Label, and they do darn good. Mm. So my preference is a little Orange Label plug cut herring, brined up, run behind a flasher. I usually do about 40 inches a leader behind the flasher. And if I am going to run a hoochie or a fly, I shorten up a little bit. I'm about 30, 31 inches with a hoochie or a fly.
And with the lake being so clear, what are you running for leader line?
Well, I run 20-pound, 20-pound fluorocarbon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just tell you, I tell people, remember, if you've got, you know, 300 feet of line out and you hook a 12-pound Chinook with a 20-pound leader, you better back off on that drag. Because just the drag from that flasher going through the water and then all that big loop of line dragging through the water, you can break them off very easily. So go light on the drag.
You run a fixed or a breakaway flasher?
I run, a sliding flasher or a breakaway flasher, and that gives you a big edge.
Sure.
Now, there's plans for a new Hooked on Toys in Wenatchee. What's the latest with the new shop maybe getting under construction here? Any kind of time frame, buddy?
Well, we're all really excited about it down at the store. It's a brand new location. Right now, we're at 18,000 square feet, and the plan for Tom, the owner, is to build a 40,000 square feet.
Holy smokes.
So we are going to have a ton of stuff. We are waiting for the city to put in a couple new streets And I will tell you, the COVID thing slowed this down, the process down quite a bit. But we're still all very excited about a new shop.
How cool.
Right on.
Check out the website, hookedontoys.com. He's Rick Grable. You find his smiling face behind the reel counter. Rick, we're gonna be calling on you more often. We're not going to give you another year off or whatever the heck it's been. It's just a lot of fun to have you on. Great information, buddy.
Thank you, buddy. Always a great chat.
Thanks,
man.
Thanks, guys.
Have a great weekend. See you, Rick.
Take it easy. Coming up next, a critically acclaimed, award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The Northwest Outdoor Report is brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
The Snohomish and Skycomish Rivers are seeing a banner run of silvers this fall enough that WDFW just announced another extension for that fishery through October 10th. That's tomorrow. Tom Sakamoto at Three Rivers Marine says the fishing's been lights out for coho on both the Snohomish and Skycomish. Limited as one hatchery coho per day. Tom said there are plenty of wild coho in the system that need to be released. Dick Knight spoons and Vibrex spinners are the ticket in that system. Sakamoto also mentioned that Lake Washington's kicking out a fair number of coho. He said trolling works, and so do small jigs like a 1 ounce dart.
Skagit River Coho Fishery extended, waterfowl on deck. There's enough coho entering the Skagit Valley. WDFW announced an extension to the season. Anglers got through October 24th to fish for coho on the Skagit and Cascade. Kevin John from Holiday Sports in Burlington said the fishing's just been excellent in the Skagit for silvers, and the usual tackle has been working. Silvers are falling for size 4 and 5 Vibrax and Brad's Wigglers in purples and pinks. Kevin noted that the Skagit will be closed Tuesday through Thursday from Highway 9 to Concrete, and the Cascade is also closed on Sunday and Monday to accommodate the tribal fishery. On the waterfowl front, Kevin said the fall flight of snow geese is pouring into the Skagit Valley as well. They expect another bumper crop of snows this fall. And check this out. The limit's been bumped to a 10-bird bag limit. He says there's a pile of ducks already hanging out in Padilla Bay as well.
The Cowlitz River in southwest Washington is seeing a big return of coho also. So many coho are returning to the Cowlitz that WDFW just bumped the silver limit up to 6 per day. Todd Daniels from Tall Tales Guide Service said the fishing is lights out for silvers in the Cowlitz right now, but the mark rate is still pretty low. He reported that around 80% of the fish they're catching right now are sporting an adipose fin and need to be released. He's hoping that rate improves in the coming weeks. Regardless, the fishing is excellent, and Todd expects it to continue through the month of November as long as the river stays fishable.
Rick Graybill from Hooked on Toys in Wenatchee, we just had on the show, said there's a pile of coho in the Columbia River near Wenatchee right now. Rick said 53,000 coho have spilled over Rock Island Dam so far, and most of them are headed for the Wenatchee and Icicle Rivers. Big numbers of coho are a fairly new thing in the Wenatchee area. Rick says they're still kind of trying to figure out how to catch them. The Vernita stretch of the Columbia also has been good lately for Chinook. Rick said the guides have been producing kings running super baits or spin fish behind a flasher. Grable says Lake Chelan also has been producing good numbers of king salmon, trolling small cut plug herring behind a dodger or flasher is the ticket on the big lake. The fish seem to be suspended. Grable says to troll 120 to 180 feet for the best chance of catching a Lake Chelan king salmon.
Razor clams are underway on the coastal beaches. There's opportunity to dig in all four beaches through Monday, and these are late evening digs. Make sure to bring a powerful headlamp or lantern with legs along. Tonight's low tide is 9:38 p.m. and the digging usually starts around 2 hours before that low slack. After being closed all last season, there's an abundance of razor clams on the Washington coast. For that reason, WDFW has increased the razor clam limit from 15 to 20 a day. The next set of razor clam digs tentatively scheduled for October 19th through the 25th. Watch the WDFW website for more information on those razor clam digs.
Don't forget that crabbing reopened last week in marine areas 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 8, 2, 9, and a portion of area 12 north of Ayok Point. Crabbing is allowed in these areas 7 days a week through December 31st. Shellfish managers will decide if enough quota is left in marine areas 10 and 11 after they evaluate the data from catch record cards that were just sent in to see if there's enough quota left to open those areas.
The general rifle season opens next weekend for deer hunters statewide. Mule deer hunting is open from October 16th through the 26th on the east side of the mountains. Hunters get an extra few days to harvest a whitetail in select eastern Washington units, with that season running through October 29th. On the west side of the mountains, the blacktail season runs from October 16th through the 31st. The late season runs from November 18th through the 21st. Roughly 60% of the blacktails are taken on the late season hunt in western Washington.
Waterfowl also opens next weekend, with that season running from October 16th through the 24th. There's a 2-day closure, then the season reopens again on October 27th through January 30th. Overall, waterfowl counts are down somewhat this year, mainly because of the drought in the western United States and Canada. Coming off 50-year highs, though, the duck numbers should still be really solid. Goose counts look incredible, however, and biologists expect another big flight of snows and an above-average number of Canadian honkers.
WDFW will be hosting a virtual town hall meeting on October 26th to discuss options for the upcoming coastal steelhead season. Unprecedented angling restrictions were placed on the coastal rivers last winter in an attempt to get more steelhead back to the spawning grounds. Fisheries managers want to hash out a lot of the possibilities out ahead of time through town hall meetings and have set up an ad hoc 12-member coastal steelhead advisory board to oversee the meetings. The meeting is set for 5 p.m. on October 26th, and more information and a link to attend can be found on the WDFW website.
Here's your prize winner of the year, a woman charged with harassing a grizzly bear in Yellowstone Park. A judge just sentenced an Illinois woman to 4 days in jail for not moving away when a grizzly bear with two cubs came dangerously close in Yellowstone National Park. Samantha Daring, age 25, of Illinois, pleaded guilty to willfully remaining, approaching, and photographing wildlife within 100 yards in Yellowstone National Park. When other visitors backed away and got in their cars, Samantha stayed put and kept taking photos and videos of the grizzly bear. The mother grizzly eventually bluff-charged Samantha before turning away. Grizzlies have killed 8 people in the Yellowstone region since 2010. The judge noted that this woman was lucky she didn't become number 9. The judge banned her from Yellowstone Park for a year, made her pay a $1,000 fine. She also has to pay $1,000 to a wildlife protection fund.
The Northwest Outdoor Report has been brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
It's not hard to become grizzly poop.
I like
it's
that,
really easy.
I like that the bear had to bluff charge her. And then the bear was finally like, I don't know, this lady's crazy. Yeah. I'm out of here.
Idiot of the year.
Oh, my goodness, dude.
What is she thinking? Anything, you know, for a little bump on social media.
Yeah.
You know?
She's like, this is going to be so cool on Instagram.
Man, on TikTok.
The
this
gram.
Is going to go viral.
Oh, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, classic. Classic.
Freaking believable. 10 snow geese a day. That's a pile of feather picking right there, boy.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Holy
yep.
smokes.
We just got a text from the 360. It's raining in Sitka today.
Who's in
from
Sitka?
Somebody in
who's
Paulsbo. In I wonder who that is. Somebody that's been sitting around injured the last couple of weeks. Also, up in Craig, where we spend summers. 109-mile-an-hour wind a couple nights ago.
What?
Just a ripper. Yeah.
So our friend Joel Martin of fishbaronoff.com, he texted me last Friday night, and he goes, hey, man, let's go hit the Cape. It was 35-foot waves, 35-foot seas, okay, with the occasional 45-foot freaking wall.
A gust to 124 miles an hour in Randall.
I mean, that's you want to die?
Ripper.
Just, yeah, dude.
Absolute ripper. Sustained winds to 80, 85, 90 miles an hour right in Craig, right where our place is. And that 110-mile-an-hour wind was on Sunnyhay Mountain right above our house right there. Yeah. Yeah, crazy. They're just getting hammered up there in Southeast right now.
I'm surprised people live there in the wintertime.
It's horrible. Yeah. I mean, seriously, dude, right now you got what, 6 hours of daylight, 7 hours of daylight right now?
In a bit. You got a little bit more time on that. But
then eventually it's going to come down to about yeah,
but in between,
December.
I mean, these are the storms that keep people away, too.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot of rain. I mean, 12 feet of rain is no joke.
And
they measure rain in feet.
12
feet
of rain.
Not inches,
and it's
you know?
Rain blowing sideways, and it's dark 19 hours a day.
Yeah.
But in the springtime?
Epic.
We'll be right back there.
Yeah.
we'll
yeah.
Epic.
There's no question about it. It's like, you know, it's, an amazing place. Once Southeast Alaska gets a hold of you, and it got a hold of you too.
Oh, it got all in me this year.
It's an amazing place.
So anyway, again, Sitka.
Yeah, no kidding. I also got fired up about Peregrine Lodge and North End of the Queen Charlotte. I'm looking forward to bringing a whole bunch. We already got a whole bunch of guys booked ready to go there that you know before the Great Unpleasantness didn't make it up. So we got a bunch of guys. So if you do want a piece of that trip, log on to peregrinelodge.com. All right, let us talk a little bit about deer hunting, shall we? Huh? How about instead of patterning the deer, we pattern the hunters? Chris Dunham, Western Hunter Magazine, talking open and day deer next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's wheelhouse, brought to you by Wellcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Welcome to the wheelhouse here in 710 ESPN's The Outdoor Line. We're stepping out of the wheelhouse. We're stepping up into the foothills. We're going to westernhunter.net. That's the website of our next guest, Chris Dunham, editor of Western Hunter Magazine. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Yeah, morning, man.
Morning, Chris. Thanks for taking the time, buddy. And I'm surprised to get you this weekend. You're usually in a hunting camp this time of year, but we're lucky to have you on air here. You know, we talked a couple days ago. We're a week away from our general firearm here in the state of Washington. A lot of folks going to be hitting the deer woods next weekend. And I know you've got some tips for folks up here to try to find a mule deer or something up in our neck of the woods. Not only to find a deer, but also to maybe outsmart some of the other hunters in the woods, because there's a lot of folks out in the hills nowadays. What kind of tips you got for us, buddy, for our listeners?
So I would say I've spent a lot of time hunting in country where it's, you know, a lot, high density of hunters like you deal with there. And the thing I would say, if a guy said he was going to have 7 to 10 days for the hunt, I would spend I would be there 6 days early scouting, trying to pattern a single buck, as opposed to showing up and putting your orange on opening morning when the chaos has ensued already. Spend as much time as you can possibly scouting, trying to pattern that, you know, find that buck, pattern that buck, and kill him on opening day.
Be there, stay living on him, watching him, and then opening morning, you're done, you're packing out, you're heading down the mountain when the rest of the guys are heading
up.
Perfect scenario.
Absolutely. Yeah, deer are such creatures of habit, and even our Arizona deer, I feel that they're creatures of habit. So they've gone through this entire summer, early fall, basically doing the same thing every single day. And then all of a sudden, you know, the pumpkin army shows up, and on day two of the hunt, everything's changed.
Yeah.
You know, so if you can figure out what's happening right now, you've got a really good chance of killing a buck on opening day. After that, man, it's anybody's guess what's going to happen.
You know, and just like you you're down in Arizona, but you hunt all over the West. You know, all of our Western states have been in an incredible drought here recently, and Washington's no exception to that. How often do these deer have to have water? How far can you? You know, can you be a few miles from water and still be into deer? Or do you need to be really close to springs and creeks and whatnot to have a chance of getting one of these bucks?
Yeah, certainly. You know, deer that typically what we see anywhere in the West, if there is a permanent water source, you do have, you know, family groups, essentially, you know, does and fawns that will hang fairly close. But bucks will travel anywhere from, you know, a mile in denser country like y'all's. Even in down here in Arizona, they might go 5-6 miles at night to water. But they do tend to, in droughty conditions, and certainly during hunting season, and bigger, older animals do tend to get nocturnal when it comes to habits, you know, daily habits like going to get a drink of water. But as far as, you know, the question as far as how long they can go, man, I'm still waiting for somebody to prove, prove that one direction or another, because I feel like I've seen deer water on an absolute daily basis, and trail cameras, you know, have documented that, to where a buck will only show up to a particular water source every 3, 4, 5 days. And you know from experience that that's got to be the only water source that he could be using, but he's only doing it every 3 to 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many variables when it comes to the deer moving to water. I mean, how much water are they getting in the feed that they're eating? If it's extremely dry, like what you deal with down in Arizona, you know, you have these the guzzlers, right? These big dugout areas with a small stream or creek flowing into them. A lot of those deer have to utilize that every day. Here in Washington, in the mornings, a lot of the time, even if it's dry, there's a lot of moisture on the grass. Maybe those deer don't have to go to a large water source, but maybe every 3 to 5 days, right?
Totally agree. They're survivors, you know. I mean, deer are just they're survivors, and they figure out, you know, just like us, if it's hot and dry, I'm going to find shade. I'm going to find, you know, food sources with more moisture in it. I'll probably stick to north-facing slopes where there's a little bit more succulent vegetation and, you know, cooler and out of the sun to minimize the amount of moisture you're losing to, you know, basically dehydration and just heat.
We're talking with Chris Dunham, editor of Western Hunter Magazine. And Chris, I tell you what, man, you can look in just about anybody's closet here that has an outdoor background, and here's an old military bolt action rifle. And you know, I've seen these things out in cold days. They're just, there's a whole lot of parts to them. I've seen them freeze up. So the newer actions, we're all shooting the new Browning X bolts. and we're taking advantage of some of the new cartridges, particularly the 6.5 PRC and the 6.8 Western. After growing up shooting belted magnums, hot sixes, 270s and stuff, the performance of these rounds blows me away. They're a lot easier to shoot. What's your tech on some of these new rounds and new rifles that guys can hit a field with?
Oh, I'm a huge, especially the 6.8 Western. It's blown me away. In fact, I was at the rifle range yesterday with a brand new rifle, getting it set up, and it's the X-Bolt Carbon Pro. I think it only weighs unscoped. It's only like 6.6 pounds, 4 ounces, something like that. It's a lightweight rifle. Scope and all, it's less than 8 pounds. I shot 20 rounds through it yesterday in, about 2.5 hours. I don't even have a hint of like soreness. It never even occurred to me that I was dealing with recoil, and I'm shooting a 175 grain bullet at almost 2,800 feet a second. And it was really close to seven millimeter mag type energies, yet it's a pussycat. So I just love them because again, lower recoil, they're easy to shoot. They're more fun to shoot because you're not putting up with that beating. You get to spot your, I think one of the biggest advantages too, especially the guys that are solo hunters, is being able to manage recoil so that you can see your impacts better.
We've all experienced that for sure.
Yeah. If you know you hit that deer, because you saw it. You saw the deer react through the scope. It's a huge advantage.
And as much as I work on my trigger pull, shooting some of my magnums at the range and even in the field, I still tend to get a little flinchy. And when I'm trying to sight in my 300 or my Win Mag or something, I can tend to get a little flinchy going through a range session. But with these things, they're so sweet. And you're right. I mean, getting back on an animal after you pull the trigger is really critical. And you have a bunch of muzzle jump, one of these magnums, it can be really hard, especially when that buck just took off into the brush or running up the hillside or whatever, hard to get back on him,
You're able to see that impact, but you're also able to get back on and get a second shot quickly, where with the bigger calibers, there's a lot of jump there. I mean, back in the day shooting the 300, you'd shoot and it's like, whoa, how do I even get back to where I was?
Especially if you're zoomed in. If it's a long shot, you might be zoomed in a little bit and have your power cranked up.
So tell us a little bit, Chris, tell us a little bit about how you start a range session though, because starting off just practicing, dry firing a couple times, particularly with a bolt action rifle, so you know where that trigger's going to break. It seems like a great way to start your range session. Is that kind of your normal pattern, when you get to the bench and you start working up a rifle?
Yes, exactly. Especially just getting started, trigger control is everything. Understanding that trigger, what kind of pressure it's going to take to break it, making sure that you got your hand comfortably in there so that the trigger's comfortably against your finger. Because people always talk about, you got to squeeze until you get this surprise release, almost like a bow hunter. One guy put it to me, he said, well, if you were a hostage and a bad guy's got you, you got a sniper over there. Do you want him to be surprised when the gun goes off? Or would you let him know exactly when that gun's going to go off? So, I think that's really critical, the trigger control. And then certainly with the rifle, being a little bit patient with it. I watch people at the range, they got a brand new rifle and they shoot 3 rounds, it doesn't shoot real well, and they get angry, they get impatient. Well, it could take anywhere from, 40 to 200 rounds for a gun to really settle in and break in and for velocities to become consistent, as the barrel breaks in, you kind of what I call filling in the voids of the machine marks. So I just like to take my time, be really patient. I shoot different loads so that I don't even have expectations of a group. And obviously don't overshoot it. Definitely, I'll shoot 3 rounds, let it cool. Mm-hmm. Then 3 rounds, let it cool. And just be patient with the rifle and don't be in a rush. Give yourself 3 or 4 hours on day one.
Yeah, for sure.
Yesterday was day one for me, and I'm going back on Tuesday to just do some finishing evaluations on groups and what I need to do with my turret.
Now, I know you just got out of the elk woods. You kind of had a rough time, and we did too, elk hunting here this last go-around for us. But what do you got coming up, buddy? I know you got a bunch of hunts planned. I mean, as the publisher of Western Hunter and the producer of Western Hunter TV show, I guarantee you're going to be out in the mountains here coming up the next couple of months. What do you got on the radar screen, buddy?
Yeah, it's actually a little bit chaotic. I mean, I hate to be that guy that complains about hunting too much, but in the next 8 weeks, I literally have like 4 days there where I think I know for sure I'll be home.
Yeah.
I've got two hunts in Idaho back to back for mule deer and moose, then straight up to Montana for mule deer hunt. And then hopefully I get home in time to, got some friends coming down from Swarovski and Camp Chef to do a coos deer hunt here in Arizona. Then I've got 2 days off and it's off to Colorado. Then home for Thanksgiving and then back to a coos deer hunt the day after Thanksgiving.
That sounds horrible. I feel so bad for you, buddy.
Oh man, what a bummer.
Yeah,
jeez.
Okay.
That's a rough one.
When I grow up, I want to be the publisher of Western Hunter magazine. Chris Dunham, dude, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it and good luck this fall, buddy.
Yeah, good luck, man.
Thank you. Send along some pictures, man. So we can live vicariously. Thanks, Chris. Have a great weekend. See you, buddy.
Thank you too. Bye.
All right. Coming up next, the hottest report heard all week and the techniques you need to succeed. It's Roy Robinson RVs, really? Where? And it's next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really?
Where?
Just coming back from the island of Tin in the Lady.
Where'd you get him, man? No way. You gotta tell me. I'm not gonna tell anybody.
Ocean Journey Red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got him?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonRV.com's Really? Where? RoyRobinsonRV.com will take you anywhere. Really?
Head up to the all-new Roy Robinson RV Center, 15855 Smoky Point Boulevard in Marysville. You're going to find a complete selection of Class A diesels, Class Bs, Class Cs, Super Cs, travel trailers, fifth wheels, tow haulers, pop-ups, campers, and so much more. Roy Robinson RV Center, RoyRobinsonRV.com.
Coho fishing, once again, front and center here for this Really Where segment, North Sound Rivers. We'll get this Snohomish and Skykomish through tomorrow, Skagit through October 24th. Remember, though, that on the Skagit during the week, Tuesday through Thursday, is closed down for the tribal fishery up there. And I believe the Cascades also closed on Sunday and Monday. Talked to Kevin John yesterday, though, up at Holiday Sports. He said it's really good. Guys are throwing wiggle warts. Big Vibrax spinners, fours and fives. You can fish your dick nights. You can twitch jigs. It's pretty much all working. And you can back troll little quickies in there and get them. But there is a pile of coho in the Skagit right now. And then the green's fishing really good in the Central Sound. Talked to Gabe Miller down at Sport Co. yesterday. He figured that the Carbon and Puyallup are probably kicking out a bunch of coho as well. He's been getting sporadic reports from in there. Further south, the Cowlitz is on fire. The lower Cowlitz, the coho are pouring into there. And also a friend was just fishing off the mouth of the Cowlitz down there in the Columbia River, and they're catching them down there on the little spinner program behind the flashers down there.
Well, and talking to Todd Daniels yesterday, he's up there fishing for coho. They're catching some nice Chinook that you have to release too. They're mostly wild. But he had a buddy down at the mouth of the Cowlitz, and they got four Chinook. And he's like, how far is it to float down there?
No kidding.
Well, a lot of fish down there, though, right now. And then talking to Rick Graybill on the show here a little bit ago, just a pile of coho in the upper Columbia as well, up in that Wenatchee area, heading up into the Wenatchee River. So 53,000 fish have already gone over the dam, and there's more coming.
It's awesome.
Yeah, they're going to have a pile of them up there.
Yeah, and I just hope this has seen some coming attractions.
Yeah.
You know, sincerely, it's just wonderful, wonderful news.
Then deer rifle opener next weekend. We just had Chris Dunham on from Western Hunter Magazine talking about some things to consider next weekend. He mentioned north-facing slopes.
Yeah.
These south-facing slopes have gotten fried this summer. I mean, you might get them transiting across these slopes in the morning. They're not going to be spending much time out there. There's not a whole lot of food out there for them, not a whole lot of feed. All that stuff has just been burned to a crisp with all this drought-like conditions we've had here the last few months. So definitely want to look at those north-facing slopes and then beat the crowds.
Whether that
be hiking in the night before, getting up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, hiking up in the dark with your headlamp,
Kathy is going to be so fired up about getting up at 2
in the hot tub at like half an hour before sun up and leaning your rifle up on the corner post to the deck.
So hard to keep your, it's so hard to keep your scope from fogging up.
Yeah, your binoculars fog up in the hot tub too. Yeah, I love that Chris was like, you know, I probably get there 6 days before the season.
Dude, holy smokes.
And so Rob and I were kind of talking about that during the break. A lot of folks aren't going to be able to be there 6 days before, right? But you might get there 2 days ahead of time, take a little vacation before the season, and be ahead of the crowd, right? And then for the guys who just got to show up and hunt, I think one of the keys to being successful is get up early and get to a vantage point where you can be watching a lot of country and kind of let the crowd get things moving.
Yeah, that's an absolute great point. No question about it. 866-979-3776, locally 206-421-3776. We got Jeff from Owala on line one. Good morning, Jeff.
Morning, Jeff.
Morning,
what's
Jeff.
Going on?
Oh, you there? Hold on.
We got you, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm headed to the Quinault next weekend.
Oh, okay. Nice.
How often do you change out braid on a freshwater reel, and how do you tell if it's the braid is deteriorating?
Well, the only way to tell is it'll get really fuzzy.
Furry.
It'll get furry and fuzzy, but honestly, all that braid underneath is just fine. I mean, you can cut off, you know, every year you might cut off, you know, 30, 40, 50 feet, something like that, but you really, it's fine. I mean, I still got braid on there that's 3-4 years old on my reels, and it's totally fine. You just want to change it out when it starts getting fuzzy, buddy.
Okay, and my second question for you, Rob, is, were you up in Craig when all that investor stuff went down in the 80s?
No, I wasn't. I know all about it, but no, I wasn't there yet. Just a horrible deal, though, and a lot of lore in town about that terrible incident up there.
Yeah, I saw a documentary on it recently and thought I'd ask you that. Okay, well, God bless you guys.
All right, buddy.
Thanks,
have a great
man. Man. Appreciate you calling. Take care. So here we go, dude. T-minus 1 week to hunting season. You know, get out. Like I said, you can get up to SeattleRifle.org. That's the Seattle Rifle and Pistol Association, just a little bit north of Snohomish, from 10 to 3 today. You got hunter sight-in days. You got a lot of great experienced gun nuts up there. They're going to make sure your rig is shooting straight, and that is absolutely the first step to a successful fall hunt.
Yeah, for sure. Getting that situated and then getting all your duck hunting gear as well. I mean, that's all happening next weekend as well, so get all the waterfowl gear. Make sure your anchors are all set up on your waterfowl decoys. Get them untangled because they're all tangled up right now in the bag. Guaranteed. The gremlins got in there over the summer, and tangled everything up. So
yeah,
get all that stuff straightened
out. During the youth waterfowl hunt, I just grab a bag of decoys out of my garage, and I throw them in my car and then, you know, head up there to take this kid hunting. And then I get the decoys out. I'm like,
what happened?
There's no line. There's no weights on them.
Grabbed the wrong bag.
Yeah. So I just had to throw them out there. So they're just bobbing around. Then I had to keep going out with my kayak and rounding them back up and pulling them in.
Put some in the lily pad so they can't really.
I was like, yeah, kid, I'm a real professional.
This is what I do for a living.
The tangle-free stuff is awesome.
It is.
Oh,
it works really good.
Yeah.
You got the sliding weights. You can put them at different depths, and it's really nice stuff.
I tell you what, man, I'm fired up about some snow goose hunting. 10 snows a day.
And
I
mean, 20 on the late season. They got the bonus season in the spring, late February, early March. 20 geese.
20.
Yeah, we're looking at like Alberta kind of numbers now.
Do we get
Central flyaway numbers.
Can we take the plugs out? We need to lobby for that. I want that extended
actually,
choke
tube thing.
They've got
magazine extensions,
yes.
too. We need to check on that.
I want that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, the new Browning
Wicked. As much as Nelly rips on WDFW, we're not getting any extension tube. I promise you that. We need a muzzle.
Have I been hard on them lately?
Well, it's a lot of us deserve it, but
good.
That's fine.
Darn right they deserve it. All right, so I hope you all have a wonderful week out there. If you missed any of the show, jump on theoutdoorline.com, jump on mynorthwest.com, or give us the old iTunes podcast app.
Where give you can
get us
listen.
There, too. Yeah, absolutely. Give us a follow on social media at Joe Pyburn on Instagram, at Rob Ensley, at The Outdoor Line on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For Matt Nelson behind the glass, Joey Pyburn, Rob Ensley, who actually found his way into the studio. This is Tom Nelson. This has been The Outdoor Line at 710 ESPN, Seattle.